Yeah, so I have a lot of slides, but they're mostly really boring. I just put them in to, so that they were there if people were. Oh, am I still on?
Is that working? Okay, so I'm gonna go through this fairly quickly. In view of the time, it's probably best, you know, to, maybe what we can just pick up after lunch if I don't finish and I can answer more questions about it, but this is just to sort of give you a flavor. But quite a few people, I think, in this room are already part of this process, so there's lots of people you can ask, and everyone at least should know about it. I mean, we've sent announcements to fairly broadly based groups of people, so you've probably heard about it, but what you probably don't know is, you know, is it worth getting involved and what's going to happen? So snowmass is the process by which the HEP community provides input to their committees and agency to plan what's happening in the future. And so what I did was I stole some slides. Is there a pointer? Or did I just point with my, okay. So I basically went through and stole a bunch of slides from various presentations that have been made. So this was from a presentation in March, so what will happen is this process, which I'll describe, will enable HEPAP, which is the FACA committee that provides input to DOE HEP. What will happen is that HEPAP will establish a new program prioritization panel, which is called P5, and some of you might remember the last P5 report that had CMB as a fairly small paragraph. And what HEPAP and P5 will do is they'll use input from snowmass along with budgetary and other input from DOE and NSF to make a future strategy. So basically the program, the way that that DOE sets its program is the following. DOE and NSF provide input in the form of, you know, here's what our budget is, here's what our mission is. Snowmass is the community science input process. All that will go to HEPAP P5, and then HEPAP P5 will do something like and unlike the decadal survey to produce a strategic plan that then goes to DOE. So this is one of the slides that I'm not going to go through. It's just in here for information. But if you want to know more about what HEPAP is, that kind of thing, it's all on this slide. And I assume that, well, I know this is being recorded, but I assume slides will be posted as well. Oh, in a nutshell, okay, so a few years ago, the Office of Science, the HEP part of the Office of Science at DOE discovered Venn diagrams. And they've been just obsessed with these Venn diagrams ever since. And so basically they've divided their program into these three frontiers, the energy frontier and the intensity frontier, which between them cover all of the accelerator programs and also the underground programs. And then the cosmic frontier, which in this figure, which is taken straight off the HEP webpage, includes dark matter, which of course intersects with the accelerator program, and then dark energy, okay? Which is why the DOE is so heavily investing in LSST. Okay, Michael Salomon made this plot completely tongue-in-cheek, but having discovered Venn diagrams, he then went, he's like, okay, Venn diagrams are great, and made a ton of other Venn diagrams that shows the intersection of all the different parts of the DOE. So the upshot is, if you want to propose anything to DOE, give them a Venn diagram, they love them. But what's interesting is that then this part of the Venn diagram, the cosmic frontier, had cosmic particles added to it, okay, which basically covers things like you know, the next generation Cherenkov telescope and that kind of thing. And so, you know, for the future, the hope may be for this community to include CMB in there in a more substantial way than it is at the moment, which is just a small paragraph in the last P5 report. So why does the HEP community? Yeah.
I don't get the titles, the intensity frontier, the energy frontier.
I don't know. I mean, one of them is the energy of the particles. One of them is the particle density in the beams of the accelerators.
It's a high degree. One means a high intensity.
Right.
The other one means
everything else. So,
the capitalization of C and D and is...
Oh, I added that. I added that. Yeah, that's, I added that today. Okay. So, this is not Michael Salomon putting that in there. Yeah, sorry.
Well, most of them are science topics, right? But a few of them are not, right? Like, C and B would not be, and cosmic particles are not.
Right. I mean, this is, yeah. So there's, and I'll come back to that again, actually, when I talk about it.
Why is not also in overlap with the energy front?
Oh, because I just put it in there today, okay?
You can put it in the energy front there also.
Okay, it's going to be a struggle to get it in here, okay? We can worry about the rest of it later, okay?
I'm curious that they don't, I can't see it, they don't have any, unless that's under cosmic particles, they don't have
No, dark matter's there.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, dark matter's very important because it's in the... Dark matter's there. Okay, so actually what this really should say is inflation neutrinos. Okay, I just put CMB there just as a placeholder. Okay. No, sure. I mean, I think you're right, Clem. I think this is actually something important. Yeah. No, I agree. And in fact, I think that's happening. Okay. And it's on a slide that I'll get to. Okay. So why would we argue that the HEP community needs CMB? And they don't dispute this at all. The BMO science is clearly of interest to the particle physics community. There are people in this room who are members of both communities. Astrophysical neutrino mass measurements complicate reactor and other ground-based neutrino measurements. Exactly what Clem's saying. It's the intersection of the intensity frontier and the cosmic frontier. So the bigger question probably is what can the HEP community potentially bring to the CMB community? Because we've heard a lot of talks today, and things are ticking along nicely in some areas. But I think some of the things I've heard today fit in with what I put on this slide. So, okay, so theory, that's already in place, okay? We have people doing CMB theory at national labs with DOE support. Some computing support is already in place. NERSC is the obvious example, although it's funded through a separate, it's not funded through the through HEP. The new piece that we're going to argue is engineering, and particularly with regard to detector development. So in fact, when we were hearing talks about EBEX, about this bottleneck of not just detector production, but focal plane assembly. National labs are equipped to tackle large-scale engineering issues. They may not be tooled up at the moment to tackle the specific problems we have, but they're used to tackling those kinds of problems, and that's why SLAC, for instance, is now involved in LSST, because they're building the absolutely giant camera that's going to go on that telescope. So they're used to sort of taking ideas and moving them to very, very large scales. There's an Argon program now in TES detectors that's started up. They can provide this expertise that might be transferable to large focal plane assembly. And some folks are talking about, future experiments with 100,000 detectors. So these issues with detector bottlenecks are going to get worse. So I think the question for this audience is, is this necessary? And there are many people in this room who already think the answer is yes. And if it's necessary, then SNOMAS is the way to get this into the HEP program. Okay. So why is it called SNOMAS? Well, it used to be 3 weeks in Aspen, and now it's 10 days in Minnesota. Okay, so ask Shaul and Clem, about the great places to hike and stuff. I was going to say ski, but people never skied at SNOMAS anyway. So it's now called SNOMAS on the Mississippi in small letters. It's actually the Community Study something or other. Yeah, the Community Summer Study 2013. So I think it's not going to be called SNOMAS in the future. It's taking place at the end of July, beginning of August. Have you guys been involved much in the local planning or? No? I mean, it's happening, right? So, yeah. That's okay.
Is that you want people on the outside to go to, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people should go if they want to go. I'll go through and show you. I mean, there's a chunk of time close to the beginning where I think if people want to go, it's a good idea to be there. Because most people, I don't think, are going to want to go for 10 days. Although I'm sure the organizers would like people to go for 10 days. You know, there's a real issue with trying to get people to go.
CMB, people that show up, the better.
That's what I'm arguing too. Is that if you know the last thing you want to do is sort of give the impression that you're just going with your hands extended for money and if we need to consider ourselves part of the HEP community, because there's huge overlap between this science and their science, and huge overlap in capability. But we need to invest in the process. Okay, so I'll talk a bit about the organization of SNOMAS and the deliverables of SNOMAS. So basically, the deliverable of SNOMAS is this document that's going to go to P5. So, and because this is a HEP process, it's incredibly stovepipe. So it's very, very top down. Everything branches. I think one of the things that the SNOMAS meeting will do is to try to break down some of the barriers, the artificial barriers that have been put up by subdividing everything so finely. And I'll talk about that in a minute. So you know, the frontiers are all represented. We're in the cosmic frontier, which is being stewarded by Jonathan Feng and Steve Ritz. So there are nine of these things: it's theory, instrumentation, computing. So other groups that are certainly of interest, there you go. This is exactly what Clem was saying. There's overlap with the intensity frontier, and we should exploit that overlap at the Minnesota meeting. And there has been interest. There have been cross discussions, that kind of thing. Instrumentation. The instrumentation group is basically looking at what is necessary, what instrumentation capabilities the labs need to have in the future to support the future HEP program. So if CMB, if a large format CMB experiment is part of the future HEP program, then there will be instrumentation needs. And just because of the way DOE does its funding, DOE funding is incredibly stovepiped as well. And so there's an instrumentation line. And so it's important to have crosstalk with these with these subgroups. Okay, the cosmic frontier is then broken down, okay, into six groups. Okay, there was a great deal of angst and ham wringing and heartbreak about how these were divided up. I mean, for a long time the cosmic frontier was dark matter. Okay, and this is reflected in the organization. There are four groups looking at dark matter. Okay, and then we're lumped in dark energy and CMB. Okay. And then the sixth is cosmic particles. So the organization kind of reflects that the importance that's placed on dark matter. And the reason dark matter has so much importance placed on it is because it's got this huge overlap with the energy frontier, and there's been a major buy-in by the accelerator community in this idea of the complementarity between the dark matter searches and the accelerator program and programs like CDMS now have a major participation from HEP labs. Did I hear a question?
I'm just wondering whether the CMB was put in by higher up.
Yes, it was. No, the good thing is that CMB in I'd say probably the last 3 or 4 years has moved from being something that you weren't allowed to mention to something that now now HEP wants to hear about when they're considering lab funding and that kind of thing. As somebody pointed out, we had there was a community planning meeting. There have been two of them, and there was a cosmic frontier specific one in March. A lot of you were there. As somebody pointed out, this is a science topic, and this is a tool. So it's there's no sort of rhyme or reason.
Dark energy and cosmic neutrinos.
Well, it should say dark energy inflation and cosmic neutrinos, basically. This actually doesn't really reflect what it really should. Yeah, it really should be dark energy inflation and cosmic neutrinos, because actually inflation and cosmic neutrinos, which I think I have in the next slide. What was the question?
No, I mean, the reason why CMB is not being connected to dark matter, because Because Planck with the polarization will rule out, rule in.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's
given that that the kind of the matter, I mean, this all the annihilation now in the galaxy.
Oh yeah, no. There's no question that CMB needs to be in here, but it shouldn't have been put in as CMB. It should be, what should appear in the cosmic frontier box is the science, not the tool.
Okay, CMB includes the matter.
Yeah, yeah. So in fact, actually, the way that so this is cosmic frontier 5. So you're keeping track, okay? You could make an org chart if you want. The DOE people love org charts, okay? So we're now down to like the third layer of the org chart. So this is cosmic frontier 5. Okay, and Cosmic Frontier 5 is broken out, yes?
Based on Leonardo's question, I mean, is the dark matter complementary, whatever that was called, CF4? Does that include
dark
any
matter
aspect of astrophysical?
I can't remember. I think so, yes. I think so. I can't remember. You can go to the SNOMAS website, and everything is spelled out in gory detail. Each of these have a charge. So CF5, which is being organized primarily by Scott and Klaus, and then I, you know, occasionally do something, I occasionally help out, is broken down in the following way. There are four groups that are basically related to dark energy, and then inflation and cosmic neutrinos, exactly as it should be, okay? And John and Adrian are leading this effort again, and I kind of chip in occasionally. So
but the CMB power on dark energy is to gravitational lensing for sure. No?
Sorry, say that again.
The reason why we talk about dark energy and CMB now, CMB has become a dark energy probe, is because of lensing. That's since our work in 2006.
And well, okay,
and
so
the data. So yeah, I'm considering where gravitational lensing is.
Okay, so gravitational lensing is in two places. First of all, it's in here, okay, because it's one of the probes of structure. It's here, and it's here too. Yeah, no, not, number four is not really, yeah. So it's mainly in three, I think.
So two, three, and...
Two and three, six. Yeah, two and three and six, yeah.
Yeah.
What you're saying is subgrouping. Oh, yeah. But the good thing is there's actually a lot of, you know, this looks stovepipe, but it's actually not. I mean,
that
everyone talks.
For the lensing as a process per se, still. It's detailed covariances, arc simulation capabilities, it's statistics beyond the second order, so it's definitely one issue to be investigated per se. So
a good thing to do is to look at all the bullets. If you're browsing the SNOMAS site, look at all the bullets, look at all the documents. Not just I'm just highlighting
so,
these two
so
because.
What happens in this community get together? Do you actually are you tasked with producing a document?
Coming to that, okay. Coming to that.
And all these people are engaged in that?
Yes.
And whoever else wants to
yes, coming to that. Okay. So let me just talk about the planning. After these subdivisions were made, there was a planning meeting in March. And I hope that most of you were invited. Many of you came. It's probably worth going looking there. All the presentations are online from that meeting. John presented a summary at the end of the meeting about the discussions that took place in the inflation and neutrino subgroups. The conclusion was that, unsurprisingly, CMB measurements at the heart of cosmology and fundamental physics. A stage four experiment is needed with 100 or more increase in detectors from the current stage two, which are experiments that are in the field right now. Stage three is experiments that are going to be fielded, like SPT Pol. Extended polar bear, that kind of thing. We'll need incredible attention to systematics and commensurate increase in computing, and so it's an HEP multi-lab scale project. This was the timeline. So where we are now, maybe are less than 0.1. Okay. Stage two experiments, i.e. experiments that already have collected or are collecting data, should detect Lenzi B modes. You can look at the limits on R, the limits on neutrino mass. So the idea is that the experiments that are currently being placed in the field will get down maybe to R of 0.01 and neutrino mass of 0.05 eV. The boundary between stage two and stage three projects is a bit flexible, as is actually the boundary between stage three and stage four. And so what we're looking at is the timescale of 2020 plus, which is the stage four project, which will probably, you know, you can see where the field's heading. You can see what the field's converging on. It's converging on an enormous number of detectors, and that's achieved by having an enormous number of telescopes. Okay, and you can argue about the number of telescopes and distribution of frequencies, but it doesn't really matter. Essentially, what's being converged on is something with as many detectors as possible, which can really only be achieved by having large numbers of telescopes. So you're talking about an experiment that's probably order of magnitude $50 million, okay, which is an HEP scale project. Okay, to answer Dick's question. Okay, so what are the deliverables? So what's needed at the end is a snow mass summary that will go to P5. Okay, so the input to that snow mass summary is starts at the top with contributed papers, talks from collaboration and groups, and a lot of that has basically already happened through the Cosmic Frontier workshop. You can still put other papers in if you're interested. What's happening right now is that Cosmic Frontier subgroup summaries are being written. Okay, in fact, mature draft is due by the end of this week, but that's already slipping. And there'll be a 30-page summary of CF5 that Scott and Klaus and myself will draft that will take input from from these summaries. Now I'll talk a bit about what documents are coming out of the inflation and neutrinos in a minute. And then this will go to HEPAT. So how will the documents be used? Okay, so this is the snow mass process is initiated by the Division of Particles and Fields in the APS. And so what they're saying is the report will not set priorities. Okay, so the snow mass report will not say, we think that, you know, this is the number one thing, that this is the number two thing. I mean, it won't be as explicit as that. Hopefully it will be, you know, P5 will be able to figure that out from what's written. But we've been told explicitly not to set priorities. But it will produce a resource book setting forth key questions in high energy physics and proposed means to answer them. Okay? So the two documents that are probably of most interest to this group and on which people in this room are working are inflation physics from the microwave background and non-Gaussianity, and that's non-Gaussianity measured in any way. So maybe from CMB, maybe from large-scale structure. And then neutrino physics from the cosmic microwave background and large-scale structure. Okay, so these are in progress. There are draft documents. I think, can't remember if they're publicly available yet or not. You can find publicly available outlines on the webpage, but I don't think they're frequently updated. The best thing to do is, if you're interested, is to contact John or Adrian or me to talk about that. How are we arranging community input? Well, okay, so the people who are working on the document are the product of the original meeting at Slack. What we have is an outline. We're having weekly telecons. I have no problem in sharing the document with anyone who wants to see it and then who wants to be part of it. Yeah, anyone can submit a white paper.
Right, but these working groups are supposed to then read these white papers and incorporate them.
Right, but you have a sufficient theoretical input to this process.
That's, yes, we do. I mean, we have a theoretical, you know, we have a strong theoretical input. So Eva Silverstein, who was one of the organizers of this meeting but is away this week, she's writing the theory section. Yes. Yeah, and actually that gets me to the goal of the document. Okay, so the goal of this document is science first. Okay, that's, we decided that what we're not going to turn this into a discussion of different technologies and different methods and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The first thing to do is present a compelling program of science that is clearly of interest to the HEP community, because something like this won't be part of the HEP program unless HEP scientists buy in, okay? So people who are, you know, people who have been working on theory for accelerators, technology for accelerators, that kind of thing, we have to get buy-in from that community. Okay. In fact, as an aside, so for a long time, so if you poke at the if you poke at the HEP people from DOE and say, okay, what constitutes an HEP project? They'll tell you some things that seem rational and some that don't. So one is that the science has to be part of the HEP mission, and that totally makes sense. But the next thing they'll tell you is it has to involve the HEP community, okay? And to me, that's kind of a chicken and egg situation, right? Because people become part of the HEP community because they're interested in HEP projects, and it's difficult to get a... I've sometimes interpreted this to mean as people who are currently receiving HEP funding, okay? There's some weird cultural part to DOE in which, you know, receiving DOE funding means that you're part of a community that DOE wishes to continue funding, regardless of whether or not. That might be a bit strong, but you get my drift, okay? So it's very important to buy, you know, you can't just say, well, you know, I'm doing science that's interesting to HEP. It turns out you can't even say sometimes, oh, well, I'm employed in an HEP lab. it's a very weird culture, okay? So we have to try and understand it, and the best way to understand it is to participate in the process, okay? And that way, to make a case for this stage four experiment. Okay, what about the Minnesota meeting? Okay, the purpose of that meeting is to allow interaction between frontiers and groups. So this process has been very stovepiped. At Minnesota, the idea is for everyone to get together, see what each group has done, talk about it, try and understand it. This is the part where it's really important for us to engage and sell our program. It's going to be organized so that there are parallel sessions in the mornings that involve some tinkering with what's been done, some talking about what's been done. And at this point, this is the point where the various CF subgroups, you know, the dark energy, dark matter, people will get together. In the PM, there's going to be plenary sessions that are colloquium-style, sets of colloquium-style talks, panel discussions from each group. There'll be grand panels discussing questions of broad interest to the HEP community, and that includes cosmic frontier questions. Each frontier, the instrumentation group, the theory group, all of those groups have been asked hard questions. Okay, so each group is coming up with lists of hard questions for other groups to answer. And so there'll be panel discussions focused on that. One of the main ones that's come up actually in the cosmic frontier is, since dark energy is such a big part of the cosmic frontier at the moment, to the extent that it seems to me, as an outsider, that incredibly easy to get a dark energy experiment funded. You know, these things just spring up like mushrooms, you know, so like MS-DESI has just sort of sprung out of, you know, but now it's in the HEP program. But this question has actually come from the Office of Science, which is, if W turns out to be very, very close to minus one, when do you stop? So, you know, how accurately is it necessary to know that W is minus one? Okay, so this is an example of a hard question, and there may be more coming down the line. Okay, I better stop. I don't have much more to say. There's a draft program. Basically, if the best time for you to come is July 30th through August 1st, so Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Those are the 3 days when CF5 is doing most of its work, but of course, you know, it's not a bad idea to come for a whole week or something like that. Okay, here's the draft program. I don't think it's worth going through this in detail. It's a draft program, but you'll get the idea. These should all be online. Okay, summary. I think everyone would agree there's a compelling case for even larger CNB experiments. This is the right scale for HGP to be involved. HGP can benefit the program. National lab involvement can benefit the program. To get that off the ground, our community needs to engage the HGP community and convey the excitement of the timeliness of the science. Minnesota is the forum in which to do that. I would also say encourage your students and postdocs to attend, okay? This will be their program. And by that, I mean the entire HGP program, okay? And it's also a chance to see their science in a broader context than just the kind of focused conferences that we tend to go to. And you can find more. If you just type in snowmass2013.org, you can find the whole thing in its gory detail. Okay. So I think that hopefully will trigger some lunchtime discussions. So, but anyone, you know, get involved, okay? And if you don't know how to get involved, talk to me and I'll get you involved. So, yeah.
I want to go back to the comment of feeling it's difficult to get involved if you have no idea what the process is, what
the threats
are. Well, partly. Other than this Slack meeting in March, which not everyone can attend, if there's no public open space,
I suggest
where the process is transparent.
It's a very, the whole thing's very poorly organized. We're supposed to have a public website that we're supposed to keep up to date, but you know what it's like trying to keep websites up. So in theory, there should be, you know, a draft of this document should be regularly posted on the website, but it doesn't happen. The best thing, I suggest that you just ask to be added to the email list for the weekly telecons.
I think the problem is that people let me know, sometimes when they're being held, who to ask, and there should be probably a process by which those who are organizing it.
Well, the Snowmass webpage has people's contact information on there.
I realize it's there, but I don't think everybody's been aware of that process.
We've been sending emails to, we sent it for the March meeting. We sent an email to everyone we could think of. So.
It was pretty close. I remember John sent out a panic,
No, I know, but the point is that, once you know it's John sending the emails, what's to stop you just sending an email back saying, I would like to be involved? It's all very well to, I sympathize, but people always say, we don't know who to contact. And then it turns out that nobody's looked, that none of this is secret, So. In fact, if you Google Snowmass, you'll find absolutely everything.